The Survivor Specialist Film Blake are back, and today we are discussing how to binge watch Survivor chronologically. If you don't know what that means, or if you're sitting here and you're like, we've watched every season of Survivor, that's why we listen to the specialist, great. But I know there's a lot of people who listen to us who, especially during 50 numbers went up across the board, more people interested. And I thought it'd be fun if we actually dove into this and discussed this. Now, obviously, how do you binge watch Survivor chronologically? You put on Borneo, then you put it on Australia, then you put it on Africa. So we could do it that route. But we want to be talking about here is what makes each of these seasons important. We've been doing the Every Season Matters podcast over on Patreon for our top tier patrons. We're going through every season, topics about every single season, 8 episodes dedicated to each season individually. We're up to Millennials versus Gen X starting on Thursday. And we just thought it would be fun to sit here and talk about like why Borneo does matter, even though Borneo's old now. And what was it about these other seasons? Did they gain popularity? So that when you're sitting down to binge watch it, you're not just sitting down and watching it just so that it goes in one ear and out the other. And you say, okay, great, I watched Survivor Marquesas. It's what was kind of, what were people talking about with that show? What did they think about it? And I'm going to have the very, very difficult task today of keeping Blake on track in a chronological Blake podcast. How you feeling? Do you think you can be up to the task of staying like Borneo, Australia? Not that we're going to do it like that specific, but you know, do you think you can do this, Blake? You think you got that?
That's kind of where I'm thinking. Then it's kind of like, how do you enjoy this? Not just how do you do it? Like, what buttons do I push on Paramount Plus?
Yeah, you're going to go to Paramount Plus. You're going to watch the first episode of season one.
That's what's even cooler is maybe if you could reach out to your local library and they actually have DVDs. And that kind of makes a little more sense for those first 20 seasons, because then it's like, oh, I'm watching this on a media that was what we saw it on, not commercials that, or like, it's not going to skip immediately on Paramount past the credits or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, are you trying to watch chronologically because you're trying to see how the game developed? Are you trying to do it because you're trying to get a greater sense of what everybody else's fandom is in? And I think that's something that could go through your head a couple times. And like, the one thing I'm want to get out as quickly as possible, there's always some like comments or tweets, not on any stuff we do, but like tweets being like, oh, I watched one episode of season blank and it, how do you guys like that? That was so boring. Mm-hmm. Or that was so, oh, I hated how he was talking to the women, or I hated how, wow, this gay person's really over the top or whatever. And are those straw mans? For sure. But it's more of like, I think those are thoughts that could go through your head. And I think after you watch this hour and a half, hour, 45 minutes, however long we go, about like, here's how to prep your mindset to watch older seasons. Here's what you need to look out for and be excited about. And I think there's some stuff when you hear it, when Jeff goes, this is the first time in Survivor history and it's 2026. And you're like, I know, I don't think so, Jeff. Mm-hmm. Well, when he says this is the first time in Survivor history this has ever happened, and you're in the first 10 seasons, it is.
Yeah.
So you can watch without consternation, or watch without skepticism, and be like, I'm just enjoying where we're starting. And I think there are some like, give me the most dynamic seasons. It's like, well, that's not what's going to happen. You are going to watch some very dynamic seasons in that first. And these are for the hardcore fans. If you're going back to the beginning and watching from the beginning every season, it is something where if you hit a patch of a 4 bad hours, power through it, because that's what happened. Imagine putting those 4 hours over 4 weeks of your Thursday night, looking forward to it. And then this is the Thailand boot order, or the Palau slaughter is still happening for another month.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think we're going to try to do another version of this series where we talk about it in order of like how we would do it if we were recommending it to people, not doing it chronologically, because I know we do get that question a lot. Blake, you just said that, like, give me a dynamic season. And we always have this argument. What's the best season to start somebody with? I started my wife with China. Obviously, with China, the one thing that's working against it, it's not HD. So you're going back and making people watch something in standard definition. I think Will always says Kageon. I know some people would say Samoa. Some people say, why even watch anything pre 40 at this point? We're into the new era. It doesn't matter. But for me, this is something you can still complete, right? I can't go back and watch every movie that's ever been made in the history of time to tell you, here's the first time color was actually used in a movie. People will say it's The Wizard of Oz. It's not. Color was used before The Wizard of Oz. The Wizard of Oz was just the time where it was used like the most openly. And you can't go back and do that. We have too long of a history of film. We have too long of a history of everything. You can't read every book, but you can still watch every season of Survivor. Will there be 50 more seasons of Survivor? I really don't think so. I don't think that's going to happen. If there are, it's going to be a totally different looking show 25 years from now than it is as we're recording this in 2026. But I do think that people miss what was so great about Survivor early on when they sit down to watch it now. Let's say they started in COVID and they said, I just want to watch Survivor, and they watch all out of order and they watch all over the place. And like, you miss so much of what made season special. If you start with season 17, then go back to 12, then go to 37, then go to 3, like, you're not getting the actual story of Survivor. And I get that it's not a story in the way that like Lost is a story, or the way that whatever TV show that's on now is a story, but it's still a story. It's kind of like how I know The White Lotus, there are characters who go from one season to the next, but like, you're not going to be like, oh, I'm going to watch season one, then I'm going to watch season three because I only care about the receptionist name, who I can't remember, the spa person. I only care about her story. Like, no, you're going to watch season two, even though you realistically could watch season three without needing to watch season two. And you could watch season two without needing to watch season one. That's how anthology works. But like, Survivor, you just miss what really makes everything great. And I think right now, a lot of people, like, especially these really diehard new era fans who showed up after Survivor 40, because of COVID, you're not understanding why Borneo was the hit that it was. And I think Borneo is a slog at this point. I don't find it very entertaining at all, but it was such a massive hit. And like, just to go through and kind of explain that, so when you're watching it, you can sit there and you can say, people liked this back then. But like, with Borneo, good place to start with chronologically, you really don't understand. Like, nobody had ever seen anything like this ever in the history of time. Now we are so, like, just swarmed with this stuff everywhere you look. I mean, you can go on TikTok and you can watch reality TV shows. Like, it doesn't matter. Back then, we had never seen anything like this. And that's the most impactful part. And it doesn't mean you have to love it, but you have to understand, like, those are the characters that built Survivor. That is the season that built Survivor. And I think that if you are somebody who maybe isn't a completionist, you have to watch Borneo. Like, you really don't have a choice, because you need to see where the show started, no matter what.
I think I'm going to treat this pretty much like it's an intro class to reality TV in general. So the first like reality show that's ever existed was On American Family. And that was introducing people in the early 1970s. I have the Wikipedia up, so this is kind of right. Of like, this is what documentary style could do. It's not a documentary because we don't have a beginning and end. It's just more of a slice of life on and be on the fly on the wall. And that was made those people kind of famous in the 70s. It kind of ruined their life, because it's like, everyone I talk to knows about this. And it's like, stuff that you saw in that movie, you will see in confessionals. You will see, this is what people are asking, because we need to move the action forward. So we're asking people stuff. Documentaries were not, we're not part of these people's lives. We are documenting what happened, or it's the 1980s Miracle on Ice. We're asking everything about that day. We don't give a shit about who they were married to. We don't, maybe not. And like all this other stuff, like, what'd you eat that morning? Who cares? How were you feeling? It's all about an event. So this is that. Another one major thing, if you were doing this, how this works, it, is Real World. In the very early 90s, 91, 92, it is the MTV's foray into, this is what people are like, and we're going to put seven strangers in a house. What happens when people stop being real? The Real World. And it was very interesting to be like, much of youth, you could think of casting as like, why do they not have opposites in casting these days? And there was some very crazy seasons of like, this is the punk rocker from Northern California, and here's a country bumpkin that they're going to completely clash with. And then this is the black woman from Atlanta that is trying to make it in the bigger grand scheme of things. And this other person doesn't have any black people in their hometown because it's the 90s. Like, what you may see as diversity now in 2026 in your cities, that quite wasn't what it was like 100 years ago, for goddamn sure. 50 years ago, we're figuring it out. 20 years ago, whenever, like, I guess that's 30 years ago, is the 1990s. That was whenever I was used to it. This is happening gradually, and now we have what we have now. And I think that's an important layer of the road rules comes afterwards, and it's challenges on an RV, but the one before is real world, and that's just like people living together. Mm-hmm. And so it is something where it's like, why are you telling me all this? Well, the birth of competition reality, where it's big time money, big time eyes, everything. There is not one before Survivor. Survivor is the one. And that's why I think it's worth to probably, if you watch one thing all the way through, it's not Big Brother, it's not Amazing Race. Survivor is the thing that everything else is based around. Everything else goes through Survivor. Everything else borrows from Survivor. Everything else is like attached to Survivor in some way. So I think it's very interesting to like know where this started and how we're going about stuff. So I think what's super important is when you're watching these things, people are seeing this for the first time. There is not Temptation Island, where it's kind of like, there's not Love Island, where it's like, well, we've seen people on islands before, and this is just the competition version of a dating show. No, this is where everything comes. So like, I think it is something unfathomable of like, what genre is Wizard of Oz? And it's like, well, Wizard of Oz is the first time people are seeing it. Like, it's the same type of stuff of what is Survivor? And it's like, it's the first thing. Mm-hmm. Have that be through your head when you're like, why is this so boring? It's not boring because people had never seen anything like this. And I think this is kind of one of the last innovations of major TV, because what's the next genre that came after reality TV? We don't have a clear answer because there hasn't been one. Mm-hmm. So the last major innovation in television was Survivor and was reality TV competition. And then that turned into docuseries, turned into, let's see what Flavor Flav is doing. Let's see celebrities do all kinds of stuff. Started with this.
And I think what's really funny too, like when you think about all of this now, we live in a society where now you can track how many people care about what you're talking about, right? We can see this video, and if we get 300 views, we know only 300 people cared about this one. If we get 5,000, we know 5,000 people cared about what we were saying. Like, we can see that. Every Survivor player now has an Instagram and a TikTok and an X. I mean, some of them don't keep them for very long or delete them or whatever, but you can see this. So you can sit there and you can say, well, you know, this person has this many followers. And on a season like season 50, Colby, I don't think, and I could be wrong, I don't really care, but like, I don't even know if Colby has an Instagram, but Colby's not going to have as many followers as Rizzo. When I tell you that like somebody like Colby is infinitely more famous than Rizzo, like, I'm sorry, Rizzo, that's not a knock on you. That's just people don't understand how popular this show was season one. If TikTok and Instagram and all of that existed during Survivor Borneo, the 16 people who are on Survivor Borneo would have been some of the most followed people in the world, which is not the case right now. Like, they would have had millions and millions. When I tell you, if everybody was on social media as much as they are now, you're talking those people probably would have had 30 million followers. It was insane what a cultural phenomenon Survivor was. And so, you know, when you sit down, and this is something that I've been really talking about on a lot of our podcasts recently, but when you sit down and you watch the show and you say, ooh, that's cringeworthy, or I don't like this, or I don't like that, or that's despicable, or the representation is bad. I think what's also really cool about Survivor compared to other shows is these are real people. And so even if you say, I don't like the things Rudy is saying about Rich, there were 72-year-olds in 2000 who felt exactly like Rudy or were even less positive than Rudy and wouldn't have ever befriended Rich on that island. And I think that's something that kind of gets lost when you go back and you watch through, because it's hard not to watch these things with the lens of the year that you are viewing it. But if you go back and watch Borneo in 2026, you're going to hear Dr. Sean say stuff. and nobody's really thinking about it. Like, nobody is viewing it as a negative in the way that it would be viewed nowadays. And so that's something that you also have to be able to, like, turn off your critical mind and understand, like, in 2000, there were things that were able to be said. There were things that, like, were being put on TV that were just not as, you know, viewed as negatively as they are now. And I think that's, like, a hard thing for people to understand, especially if you were born in 2010 and you're 16 years old now and you're saying, hey, I want to go watch Survivor. I'm going to watch from the beginning. Oh my God, I can't believe these disgusting things people are saying. And that's what Survivor, but that's, like, what Survivor can do. Survivor's like a time capsule for all of this. And so I think that's what's really cool that we have that. But I do think if you go and watch these out of order and you say, oh, I watched season 15, then I went and watched season one, you're probably not going to appreciate it or be able to understand it as much just because of how far the show moved forward from season one to season 15, where John Robert is the obvious villain on that season because of how he talks about people.
I think what's crazy is if we're doing all this stuff for society, I think it's important to know, like, even the internet isn't really widely available in houses whenever 2000 is there. I had the internet at school as early as third grade, and we were learning how to do it, but computers are expensive. Some people don't have internet at home. Why would we have internet at home? It's not what we use it for. We use internet for work, and we use internet for research for school projects. Internet's not fun. There wasn't YouTube for another decade.
Yeah.
Legitimately, like, I don't know how to express this to people of, like, how we consume things. And so that's a thing where you need to watch on Thursday nights, because if you don't watch it, you better put a tape in and record it. And if you've never recorded something using a VHS, that was something you programmed with your remote and said, at channel 7 at 8 p.m., do record this for blank amount of hours. If your little sister or brother changed the channel, or if you lost power, you just couldn't watch that Thursday night. And I think that's something that is unfathomable. Like, you missed it, and it sucks I have to wait till 11 at night when it shows up on streaming. But, like, there's some stuff of, like, even through all this BS that's hard to watch stuff, Borneo had 50 million people watch the finale. 50 million people now is like a seventh, one out of every seven people in America. Could you imagine that?
No.
That's insane.
I mean, here's what's crazy. Not only did 51 million people watch the finale, 38 million people watched the reunion, which aired a week later.
That's insane. Like, and these people were legit celebrities of, like, what is Colleen doing? And, like,
yeah.
I think that is funny now because people are like, I want to go on Love Island because I can turn this into a career. And maybe one out of every 75 people knows who Hoda is from last season, but it doesn't even matter because Hoda can make a career on one out of every 75 people knowing who she is. Imagine if one out of every five people know who you are in the country. And then you're like, I want to be an influencer. Like, they didn't even know what to do. Yes. Yeah. Skechers would be like, I don't know this exact thing, but like a shoe company would be like, hey, some Survivor players, will you wear our shoes? There's like the basic version of that, but that's not how people consumed this type of celebrity yet either. All of this is flying by the hip and being insane, but it was like, even as a fourth grader, we're talking about it at recess. So like, did you see it last night? They ate a rat.
Yeah.
Like, they ate a rat where? And it was like, it's Survivor. They had to kill a rat and eat it because they don't have any other food. And that is something where, What moment in Survivor 48 or 49 or 50 from the last year and a half are fourth graders going to talk about on the recess? And it is,
yeah.
Well, Blake, you're not a fourth grader, but maybe they would go, I was really inspired by Stephen Rom's trip around the thing. But it's like, you can see that on 95 networks now.
Yeah. Yeah. And you had mentioned the YouTube thing. YouTube was, it went live on Valentine's Day 2005, so after All-Stars. So through the first nine seasons of Survivor, the way to consume it, like you're saying, was to watch it. And that was it. And everybody sat around and watched it and, like, really watched it. And I think that's where, like, fame has gotten blown out of proportion to some people. It, like, being known on the internet, yeah, sure, that might make you feel better. That might make you feel like you have more clout. People should listen to you, whatever. I mean, look, we build up this channel based around Survivor and the traders and all that. And obviously we want our numbers to be good, but like people care way more about Colby than everybody on the internet realizes. Like there's a reason why Colby was asked to be back onto Survivor season 50. And it's not because he's so popular on the internet. Like I'm sure he's low. I don't even know, like I said, with his social media accounts, but like, I know we're talking about season one kind of, but like season two, Colby was in Curb Your Enthusiasm. That's how popular he was.
Colby was on Red Eye.
He was in Red Eye. Like, and this wasn't a guy who became a legitimate actor, but he was in these kinds of things. And Colleen Haskell, after season one, was in a Rob Schneider movie, The Animal, which if you haven't seen that, like, these are the things that you need to know. You do, though. Like, that's how massive. And I know you might be like, well, Rob Schneider, who the hell cares about him? Well, he was in that
2002.
Yeah,
it was.
He was in the Adam Sandler is a stick. That was a big deal. I mean, Adam Sandler is like one of the highest grossing actors of all time. So yeah, when you sit here and you say, I got to sit here and 1 in 5 people, 1 in 7, but now it can be 1 in 75. You can make a bunch of money off of the internet having 0.00000001% of the population care about what you say if they care enough about it. But back in the day, I mean, yeah, these were the celebrities. Like these were the people. I think it was real quick. I forget who it was, but they went and did like a celebrity dodgeball tournament. I think Ethan Zahn told this story. They went and played a celebrity dodgeball tournament with Jeff against the cast of Friends.
That's insane.
Like you guys don't like, that's how insane it was in the early seasons and why these early seasons are truly so important to watch.
I'm sure people would be like, and I don't get Friends either. And it's like, well, that's another podcast that we could do. I do like talking about this because it is something of to figure out how far we've come in media. This is like where we're starting. I think another thing, games in general are something you're doing for fun. It's something we're doing as a collaboration. It's like, we're playing Sorry and we're knocking everything over, but we're not doing it competitively. We're not doing Monopoly where it's like, we're going to yell at each other afterwards. Board games are like, and you're doing your head, but I legitimately think like board games in the 70s, 80s and 90s are fun experiences that we're passing time with. Card games. Okay. Some people get shot out over poker in the 1800s, but like card games are a collaboration where we're killing time until the sun goes down so we can wake up and farm again. Mm-hmm. And it is like whenever we introduce a $1 million prize, even then some of the people are like, no, like this is something we do together. We're collaborating. Like we need to eliminate the weakest link so we can be better. And then it's that 10, that's 4-1-1-1-1-1 vote.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's the first time it's like, this is cutthroat. Have you ever heard of cutting throats? If somebody like Parvati had been like, I'm going to chew up and eat your bones in the first opening confessional of Survivor 1, they'd probably take her out and put someone else into the game. Like
they certainly don't air that confessional.
And I don't think it's Mark Burnett's intent at all to put a massively cutthroat game. Like, yes, when push comes to shove and you're starving, I'm going to yell at literally everyone in the world. But I think this was the adventure of a lifetime. It wasn't the deadliest game where it's the cutthroat from day one. And if you have one mistake, you're gone. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how Survivor is now of like, I need to manage 18 people's perceptions of me, even when I step out to go to the bathroom. So people don't think I'm going to see an idol. It's like, none of that was in the original cloth of this. And that's maybe why you could be like, oh, watching this first season is not that great, is not that fun, or it's such a different show. And I think that's a valuable thing to think about is why is this a different show? Mm-hmm. And it's for always an American audience, but they're all different. It's not, we're not picking, this season's for the people that live in Kentucky, but we are saying, what does an audience in 2001 want to see? What does an audience in 2015 want to see? And I think that is something where the sexuality of the show goes up and down. The honor code of the show goes up and down. Now that there's more gamesmanship and Rob Cesternino has introduced the mastermind thing. We can do this up and down whenever it comes to strategy too.
Yeah. And one thing that I've been saying on the Winning Survivor series that I'm doing Once Upon an Island, if you want to check that out, everybody, is it did seem like when people were playing these early seasons, they weren't really playing to win. And this happens kind of for the first 2, 3, 4, 5 seasons. A lot of people were coming out there. They didn't really know what this was going to be. They didn't know that reality TV could become a career. They didn't know that this could be something. So a lot of people were coming out and they were more worried about what their appeal was going to be. It's like Colby in season 2 was fine losing to Tina because he gets to go on to be the All-American Cowboy and he doesn't have to betray that image of himself. And a lot of people were more worried about what their image was going to be when they walked off the island. And that was kind of like they were going out there to represent. And so you might watch the early seasons and say, man, why didn't that person make this move? This person's so dumb, whatever. People weren't playing it like a game yet. That really, in my opinion, doesn't start to happen until they announced that All-Stars was a thing. And then people said, ooh, I can play Survivor once, and then I can play Survivor again. And I think that's when people's mindset started to change. And like even Johnny Fairplay was coming out there because he wanted to be like the reality TV bad guy. And Rupert wanted to be the hero. And even though Fairplay, you know, he's leaning into that character of himself and he still wanted to win the game. And he was playing kind of to prove that like a villain could win the game. It's also one of those things where like you see this and you say, okay, but that's one guy. Well, now all of a sudden there's opportunities to come back and play again. And I think we do see that change start to happen. So I want to, since we're almost at a half hour already, and we don't want this to be like a 6-hour podcast, I want to kind of talk through why these early seasons very quickly, like one little thing about these early seasons that is super important and why you should be paying attention. Borneo, you just got to watch the whole thing because it sets the stage. So I think that's been established. We just talked about it for 30 minutes. Australian Outback.
Everyone knows that familiar feeling when you just can't answer that one simple question. What's for dinner? Well, thanks to Omaha Steaks, I find myself in that situation way less frequently. Dinner is handled in minutes when I keep my freezer stocked with restaurant-quality protein from Omaha Steaks. And it's not just tender steaks. We're talking flavorful burgers, chicken, seafood, sides, and even desserts, all delivered directly to my door. So whether it's a rushed weeknight evening or a Saturday night cookout, you can have quality protein on hand when you need it. And let me fill you in on a little secret I've been using the past few years. Omaha Steaks proteins aren't just great to have in your own fridge. They also make fantastic gifts. When my dad's birthday comes around, I'll gift him one of the many options of steak packs, and it's an instant win-win. One year I got him the complete cookout collection, which is perfect because he enjoys grilling up everyone a great meal, and I make sure I'm there to celebrate with him, so I get a fantastic steak dinner myself. Win-win. Feel free to use that one. And I want to clarify something for any skeptics out there. Yes, frozen delivery can be this good. Omaha Steaks is known for their meticulous aging process and vacuum-sealed individual packaging. Shipped nationwide and arrives frozen, ready for grilling, searing, and roasting with minimal effort and time. No last-minute runs to the store. They can't match the quality Omaha spent generations perfecting. And if you've never tried them, the Burger Perfection Flight is the perfect introduction. For just $79.99, you get 20 premium steak burgers crafted from 5 distinct cuts of meat. We got filet mignon burgers, New York strip burgers, ribeye burgers, brisket burgers, and sirloin burgers, each with their own different flavor and style. So try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99, plus get $35 off with promo code BEEF. This isn't some rinky-dinky discount. That's $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF, B-E-E-F, for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details.
In Backtrack by Mark Cameron, the past is prologue for a violent criminal with 3 names, Ricky Lee Pink. Pink has been rotting in jail for years, plotting revenge against the man who thwarted his almost perfect theft of $5 million in diamonds. That man, Wayne Cutter, is deceased, but his grandson, Arliss, is very much alive, for now. Pink and Cutter about to collide in a violent confrontation on a floating city in the middle of the water, a massive cruise ship traveling around Alaska's Inside Passage. An experienced U.S. Marshal, Arliss must move fast but cautiously, or he may be the last of the Cutter family tree. As Survivor fans, it's not just the strategy and social dynamics that keep us enthralled. It's also the idea of man versus wild. This concept is at the heart of all Mark Cameron's novels, and it's especially prevalent in Backtrack. It's one of the main reasons I enjoyed this book, and as listeners of The Specialists, I know you will too. If you're an outdoor enthusiast, fan of wilderness thrillers by authors C.J. Box and William Kent Kruger, or just love a fast-paced action thriller from the likes of Brad Thor or Jack Carr, make sure to pick up your copy of Backtrack today. An Alaskan resident and Texas native with nearly 30 years in law enforcement, Cameron is a master of action and gritty detail. He brings explosive authenticity to Backtrack as U.S. Marshal Arliss Cutter's manhunt will employ all his skills and knowledge as a member of the U.S. Marshal Service. Backtrack by Mark Cameron is available now wherever books are sold. I think Australian Outback is really important because it's a redo of Borneo, but you see how much more polished it is because now they have the money. Now they have everything behind it. They went to a location people were really into. You know, it's something different than just the island. Now they're in the outback. What did they do with challenges? Jumping off the cliff. I always think about Kentucky Joe jumping off the cliff. That's like one of the most insane things. Season three has the first twist in the history of the show, which is we're going to switch tribes and watch how that happens. And watch how that immediately changes the way the game is played. The final nine vote of Survivor Africa is one of the coolest moments in the history of the show, in my opinion, because a flip doesn't happen, but it absolutely should have. And it was somebody who was in the alliance that gained power that for some reason removed himself from that power. And I won't get into too many details with this stuff because I do feel like if you haven't watched these seasons, maybe you don't want to be spoiled on it. But that one's massive. And then in season four, we actually get it where they do flip the power in the game. So go ahead, Blake. I see your hand up.
So thought process for these first four seasons, it's for every one of these seasons, how to watch this Survivor and get the most bang for your buck. I think you watch at most four episodes a day. I think that's the has to be the upper limit of you being able to digest what's going on. For you to be able to be like, oh, what could happen next? I'm not saying you should do one a day. Maybe that's pretty fun too. But remember, this was originally consumed once a week, just like you're doing it now over a 13-week period. You could go talk to everybody at the Wilder Cooler. You could be on forums. And all of that after about season 20 is probably ready available on the internet that you could still go find. Everything from before that, maybe not so much. But there's places you can go, like Survivor Sucks. Go look through all the archives there. There are things like this. I don't know how far Reddit goes back. I think at least to 30s for sure. But I think it's worth seeking out that stuff or go find someone else that has rewatched it. It doesn't have to be us. But if you're on our Patreon, you probably have already done this. But if you are looking for more stuff of like, I need to do this, it's my due diligence as a Survivor fan, there are places that have done rewatches. Go ahead. And after you're done with your finale, consume that content. There's no tests. There's no exams. And there's no, like, you're going to prove it to people in person at the next Bryson Wynn thing you go to. But it is something of, if you are doing this for expanding your world, expanding your mind, expanding your Survivordom, that's another nice way to bolster it and see whether it's chronologically you found something from 2001 that talked about it. That's also cool, but you probably can't do that for every season. But there's even like Time Magazine articles that Wayback Machine or all that stuff is saved forever. And you could probably, even if you want to do something dumb of like, hey, I live in Kentucky, we'll go to your newspaper archive that is the local Kentucky newspaper for the last 60 years. I know damn well they talked a lot about Survivor in 2000 and 2001. And that's probably a cool way to get yourself anchored into it of like, even the people of Kentucky, what were they doing? They closed down they opened up the gym at the local junior high and they all watched it together because the 80 Survivor fans wanted to watch in a first watch party ever. Like that shit was happening in 2000, 2001, because some people maybe didn't have TV or wanted to watch it bigger. Like, they would do that for the people that lived. Like, our local person is on Survivor. We're going to do a watch party in our junior highs.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, you know, understanding like who, yeah, but going into the way back machine here and talking about, you know, what were people thinking at the time? I think understanding the popularities of the time too, because I do think if you watch the show now, there's so many people who have their opinions on the show. We're just two of them who also just have our opinions on the show, but we were also there early on. And I can tell you with certainty that the Kucha tribe was very popular during Australian Outback. Nowadays, people will tell you, oh my God, it's a cursed tribe. They're so bad. They're so evil. Everybody did this. I mean, obviously you have Varner and Scoopin. That's not a good duo to start with. But a lot of people will talk bad about Kucha now. In 2001, Kucha was unbelievably popular. Survivor Australia is the most popular season of the show. That cast hit a different level of fame. And so being able to like watch the show and try to find some conversations from around the time frame is good, because I do think that you get all these people who just binge watch it. And they're like, I remember when we did the winner thing, the winner bracket that Dalton Ross did, Brian Heidick taking on Kenzie, and Kenzie beat Brian. And I just like tweeted it and was like, this is crazy, guys. Like, Brian Heidick is a infinitely better player. Like, I'm sorry. His game was dominant. And I was called a sexist, a misogynist. I hate women. I hate this. It's like, no, I'm not supporting the fact that he shot his puppy. Like, I'm not doing that. I'm supporting that he played Survivor Thailand and was a very good player of the game of Survivor. And at the time, Brian wasn't popular, but Brian was a, you know, he most people did consider that he played a very good game of Survivor. So I think you have to go back and look at it from that standpoint, because here's, you know, going through kind of what I was doing. If you look early on, season one, Rudy, Rich, Colleen, those were kind of the people that popped the most. Season two, Colby was number one. Elizabeth was also, you know, America's sweetheart. Season three was all about Big Tom, Lex, and Ethan. Those were the three most popular players on that season. It's really not close. There wasn't a fourth that was that close. Season four, people either loved or hated Boston Robin. I think that was the first player that you actually got where people either loved them or hated them. Kathy Vavrick O'Brien was definitely the fan favorite there. Season five, the cast was not popular. I couldn't tell you who the fan favorite was. Season six, everybody loved everything about that season. Rob Cesternino, Jenna and Heidi getting naked for peanut butter. Everybody loved all of that stuff. Tara Knox Incognita here says Jerry was legitimately hated. Yes, that's another good point. Season seven, Rupert, biggest hero ever. Fair play, biggest villain ever. And just talking through those seasons that way, I just don't think people really understand. Like, Boston Rob's been on so much stuff, but I don't think people understand, like, Boston Rob wasn't the most popular player the first time he played. And when you watch Boston Rob play his first time, he's not the Boston Rob that he becomes. Yes, he does some cool stuff. He is the first one to essentially like purposefully tank his tribe just so that he can maintain the power. But you're going to watch that season, you're going to know who Boston Rob is, but try to get into the mindset of who was America actually rooting for? Because Kathy Vavrick O'Brien, Colby, Lex, Big Tom, and then, you know, the season one people, that's who everybody was talking about going into All-Stars. And that's why I always talk about with All-Stars that it's such a disappointing boot order and such a disappointing ending, because a lot of the players that you actually wanted to watch play again don't go very far. And the ones who you did want to watch play again, with the exception of Rupert, do go very far. And it really ruined the legacies of a lot of those players. Obviously, we see Colby come back. We see Ethan come back. We see Boston Rob come back a lot, but we don't see a lot of the players who were the stars of those early seasons come back. So that's why I want to like point out Kathy Vavrick O'Brien, you know, in season four, she was so popular. Big Tom, Ethan, Lex, unbelievably popular. Rob Cesternino, obviously unbelievably popular. Rupert, you all do not understand, like, unless you were there, because now I know, like, Rupert drives people crazy sometimes. You do not understand how popular Rupert was when Pearl Islands aired. Like, in rewatching it, you still can't understand it. He was the most popular person to play the game when he played. You know, I think that's why when you get to All-Stars, he ends up winning the fan favorite award. Everybody loved Rupert so much because he was this larger than life pirate guy. And, you know, I know people will say now Amazon aged poorly. Watch it with the 2003 lens. Just watch how these people interacted and watch what the show was. Amazon was so unbelievably popular. They did the theme again 3 seasons later, right after their All-Star season, because that's how much people loved it.
Yeah. And I think, what are you missing? Like, as you're watching this stuff and you're like, wait, this reminds me of a joke in SpongeBob. This reminds me of a joke on The Simpsons. I think it kind of is like, realize that those are coming from the influence of Survivor. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, there would never be a Survivor or a Simpsons character now being like, B-I-Z-J-O-B, I'm Biz Job, baby. But if they did, it would be a direct parody of Rizzler. Not Rizzler, Rizgod. But like, they'd probably do it with the Rizzler and Rizgod together of like, that's how we make some stuff together. And it's like, the tie-dye shirt was everywhere.
Yeah.
That Rupert was probably one of the most parodiable.
Is that you what I probably just is? Say parodied people.
One of the most parodied people of our time. Like, he's the easiest parodyable.
You're never
it's hard to say that word.
I don't think it's a word. That's why. So keep going.
And it's like the tie-dye shirt, like all these iconic moments, like, why is Jeff almost an acceptable costume for Halloween? Like, we were doing that when we were 15 because we were broke. But now when you're 30, it's like you can make a probably reputable Jeff Probst costume and go, oh, are you the host of Survivor or whatever? And it's like, this is because Survivor is such an important thing of like, you don't watch many shows that had this much influence in the world. Like, you could be like, well, what about Housewives? And you're like, well, Housewives started a certain time. Well, what about Big Brother? Like, Big Brother, well, Big Brother comes on once a year and has its super fans. But like, none of your favorite shows that you think go toe to toe with Survivor because of their modern audiences. Like, even, oh my God, Survivor sucks so much more than The Traitors. The Traitors is so much more influential. It's like, even a bad season of Survivor has like, more ability to like get further, because when people say like to your face like, you still watch Survivor, it's like they have a touchstone point with it, and that is something where it's like, I haven't thought about this in 18 years, but they could turn it on and watch it because we haven't changed the show. Like, that's almost not the same for pretty much any season or of other shows. Like, the first season of I don't know. So some of these, like, maybe, oh yeah, the first season of Amazing Race is just like the last one, but there's like 7,000 different things different. And like, tribes going down to individual games, whether there's 55 idols or not, is the same shit for 25 years now.
Yeah. So here's also like something that's absolutely crazy. Top 100 broadcast cable/streaming shows of 2025, 2026. Okay. So we're getting a little ahead here, but just to talk about how popular. Stranger Things, His and Hers, Marshall. So all, you know, reality TV stuff, or not reality TV stuff is what I mean. So you keep going through a lot of Netflix stuff, Prime Video, Netflix, CBS has a lot. This year, 2025, 2026, the 25th most watched show of the year was Survivor 50. Survivor 50, 25th most watched, ahead of A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, tied with Dancing with the Stars. But other than that, not behind any other of these reality TV shows that you might think is as big. It's just not there. And so still in its 26th year, it's able to pull those kinds of numbers. And so, like, that's really important to understand, because you might think, again, this goes back to like the social media effect. You might look at something and say, no, that's more popular because that person has more followers. That's really not what Survivor is or was for the longest time. And so, yeah, whoever's on Housewives is probably going to have more view or more followers or something than people from season one of Survivor. But the people from season one of Survivor are also all in their 50s or 60s at this point. Like, It's just the way it goes. It's like, what version of popular were you? And it's like, you know, Johnny Carson was great because Johnny Carson was late night TV show host. Late night TV show hosts aren't as popular now. Everybody knows their names, but they're just not as popular. The people aren't tuning in to the same level. So as you go through those first seven seasons, those are the most popular people to ever play Survivor. It's just a fact. All Stars happens. It's this big monumental season and people love the Robin Amber storyline. That I cannot deny. But I think for most people, when it was airing, All Stars was Robin Amber and rooting for Rupert. And that was about it. Vanuatu is not popular at all because now you're coming off of Survivor All Stars and you have to deal with the fact that, look, like we just had our big returning player season. Now, how do we follow that up? You follow that up with an idea that worked for you. Men versus women. It led to maybe to this day, the most iconic moment in the show's history, which is two women getting naked for chocolate and peanut butter. They later pose in Playboy together. Like all of this is real and they try to do it. And it just, you know, the show kind of hit its next phase and Survivor like accidentally created a second phase. And then Survivor Palau, you know, the Karor tribe was popular. People couldn't believe how bad Oolong was. Stephanie LaGrosa was the most popular woman to ever play at that point. Like legitimately, she hit that level. That's why they bring back Stephanie and Bobby John for the next season. Now, I know it's easy to sit here and watch season 50 and say, Stephanie, oh God, I can't believe I have to go watch her first season. No, Stephanie was A-list level when her first season aired.
And I like this kind of thought process of whatever perception you have of people in 2026, just like it's more likely to be parasocial of I shouldn't know Phil's favorite color of peanut butter, but I do. We know when he eats it, how he eats it, who does he eat his peanut butter with.
What color?
And he likes the bright orange one. And it's like something as trivial as that could affect what you watch, but then there's stuff that isn't trivial. And I know you would be like, no, it matters to me. Like, yes, whenever you're watching the couple of seasons that are going to have somebody that's gone to jail for a heinous crime, I don't blame you if you skip their episodes. I don't blame you if you skip their season. I'm kind of like, okay, well, there's 15 other people. But it is something where, oh, even in the worst episodes of season 5, I think there is some value to watching most of that season. Because I was just going for something crazy. I think there is some value to watching most of every season to get the context. And like, I think what's super fun to me about being a fan of a fandom is you don't have to guess.
Yeah.
If you're part of the Hitchcock fandom and they go, which one of is your favorite of the first five? If you go, well, I saw two of the five, but I've heard the third one was good. And I need to see it. It's like, if you're a Hitchcock super fan, watch every single one of his movies so you can speak and you don't have to say, I have heard Thailand is bad. Get down in the trenches with us. Like that was a bad month of me watching Survivor. But that kind of makes Amazon even better when you get on the other side of it.
And that is something that you lose if you don't watch chronologically. You lose the ebbs and flows. And you know, that is a big deal because season one phenomenon, season two, super popular, season three, unbelievably popular at the time, season four, not as popular. Cause I don't, at least when it was airing live, cause I don't think America was ready for it yet. They weren't ready for like the strong people to get voted out first and like, kind of like the quieter people to go further. Season five, not popular. Then Amazon rebreathed the life into everything. And then Pearl Islands was like, oh my God, we have arrived. And then you get to All Stars and there was such an excitement. There was such a buzz. I mean, it airs after the Super Bowl. Like it was so exciting. And then Vanuatu happened and it was kind of like, okay, where are we going with this? And I love Vanuatu, but like this is the sense at the time. Palau, people really enjoyed the Karor tribe, but it did start to get to that point of like, are we really going to watch this tribe, this Oolong tribe lose again? Guatemala. Not super popular at the time, but I know people were talking about it because of that damn trek they did at the beginning. And that trek at the beginning, plus Stephanie and Bobby John coming back to play again, was a really big deal. The problem with the rest of that season is people didn't love that cast. I think that season's pretty underrated, but people didn't love it. And then obviously Cook Islands, they turn around and they break it up by race. And that changed a lot because that was not a popular thing. That lost them a lot of sponsorships at the time. That was a big deal. And you know, Daryl Seymour just said something. The Gandia situation was handled very, very poorly. It was also laughed at in a clip show.
Literally so poorly handled.
All-Stars fan favorite vote reunion. But what's also crazy is, like, that was handled terribly. And then they do a race. Then they divide the tribes by race. And it's like Survivor wasn't on the right side of things very often. Like, very often Survivor made mistakes. But people kept watching because you were almost tuning in for – how are the people now going to interact over this, though? Like, you put them in the situation. I disagree with the producers dividing by race, but I do kind of want to see, like, if the tribe, which is even more messed up that you call it, it's like, will my tribe be better than your tribe? My tribe of white people. And it's like, when you sit here and you think about this and you watch the show, yeah, it gives you an inherent rooting interest, which is weird, but it also kind of, like, makes people want to say, well, like, is this still going to work? And people kept tuning in. And then Fiji, like, disaster at the time. Everybody hated that. And then the show found its stride. But, you know, we can talk about that in a sec. I don't want to, like, rush through too much. But I just feel like getting into, like, all of these elements, like, if you don't watch in order and you watch out of order, maybe you will like One World because you didn't just watch three seasons that made you want to pull your teeth out. And maybe you won't really love China, but China also came after a really dark time in the show's history and gave us a much more satisfying ending than we had had in a while.
I think one more thing about the early seasons of Survivor and watching this chronologically, we've touched around it of, like, that this is how stuff was dealt with back in those days. And, like, we did some, like, oh, it's really nice where Rudy and Rich have their thought process, but it is kind of like, if you watch the original seasons in order, you can kind of see how castmates, contestants of a certain race are treated, contestants of a certain sexuality are treated, contestants of a certain gender are treated. Whenever they win, they're celebrated. Whenever they lose, they are dragged through the mud. Like, there's not a confessional for a lot of these people about how lazy they are. Unless it's like Sean Rector, and mm-hmm. Sean Rector has a big thing of, like, I don't want to be seen as lazy. I want to be seen as I'm saving my energy for the thing. And everyone on his tribe has an opinion of, sounds lazy to me, or I don't accept that. I'm a hardworking person. And this is something where this type of stuff in today's Survivor, we go, how could you care about lighting a fire? How could you care about getting fish? That's not part of this game anymore. You don't win $2 million because somebody has this. But back in the day, that shit was important. And that would be a major source of conflict or whatever. And that's something where it's like, Sean Rector, if he plays on season 44, he's super allied with somebody and goes to the end. And it's like, because we don't care if you're saving your energy or not, like, you're helping out or whatever. And that is something where it's like, some people are in the wrong era for them to succeed. Mm-hmm. And some people are so far ahead of themselves where, like, Brian Corridan wins Guatemala if it's season 45, mm-hmm. but he gets so owned for being a gamer at a certain point. And I do think it's interesting to, like, put yourself, hey, maybe you're too young to do this, but I, as a Survivor fan, turned 21 in, like, what was that, 2010. So from 2010 on, I 2010
maybe
89. So 2010, I could be like, oh, I would have been 21 on this season. How do you think I would have done? Who's the youngest person closest to me? And then you can kind of map, like, I'm a 21-year-old on the 2010 season. I would have gotten owned. No respect or whatever. And that's a kind of way that you can go back and do this stuff and or just pick a, I don't know. It's something where I think there's some value in that of, like, how would I deal with this? Because now that I'm 37 in 4 months and, like, I don't know why I said 37. I'm 36. But now whenever I watch these old seasons, I'm thinking it as a 36-year-old. But there's, like, different contexts of everything. And this is why people will watch old movies until we die, because you can watch Jaws as a grandpa, and now you're like, as a grandpa, I would protect my grandchildren and not let them go in there. And you haven't had that thought when you're 17 and watching Jaws in the theater when it's coming out.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I've loved about watching Survivor seasons as often as I have. I watched every season live except for Borneo. And, you know, I've rewatched every single season multiple times with the exception of the new era, just because it's still so fresh. Like, we're getting there and I'm going to rewatch it. But I've watched all those older seasons a lot. And that's why when we're doing Every Season Matters, we're going through and re-ranking the episode or the seasons. And I'm trying to take out like all of my bias, because when I'm, you know, 8 years old, 9 years old watching Survivor Australia, I feel a lot differently about it than I do now that I'm in my 30s and have watched a lot of better Survivor than what Australia is. But it kind of goes to like the whole Citizen Kane effect, right? It's like, how much credit do you want to give Citizen Kane for reinventing, you know, film in general and just like directing and like moving the needle so far forward? But in the end, it's like, there's better movies than Citizen Kane from an entertainment standpoint. You're going to be able to go find a movie you're going to be more entertained by than Citizen Kane, even though Citizen Kane is the reason why movies are where they are. Like, if that movie doesn't come out in 1941, I think it was 41, then like movies don't advance through the 40s and 50s the way they do. But why were the 70s generally considered the best decade of film? Because they took everything that they learned from the 40s and the 50s and the 60s, and they made it the 70s. Now, Survivor, in my opinion, has kind of gone the wrong direction. They haven't really gotten better. They've gotten worse in a lot of ways. But you can see these changes slowly start to happen. I did this on when Tegwith did the Surviving the Fandom with me. I kind of went through the first 20 seasons and how each season had its own identity through twists or tribe divisions or whatever it was. And they started to kind of lose that. But that's also why watching in order is so good, because you get to see like, oh, they did. Okay, that worked the first time, so it makes sense they tried to do it a second time. Like when you watch Palau and you watch Jonathan and Wanda get booted on day one without even joining a tribe, you understand why they never did that again, because that was a dumb twist and it led to a dominant Survivor season. And that's why after Gabon, they never allow them to choose tribes again. But you need to have the context of looking at how these tribes are chosen. And if you look at how the tribes are chosen, when people pick the tribes, generally the seasons are very, 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 very lopsided. Thailand, you know, ends with what, Chuigon's final five or whatever. You have Fiji. That's another one. You have Gabon. That's another one. And is there one more? I feel like I'm missing one, right? No, that's it.
Final fives of what? Of all one tribe?
No, I'm not even saying final fives of all one tribe. I'm just saying like when people were allowed to pick their tribes, it normally ended with very lopsided. Oh, and then Palau. That was the one I was making the point with. But you have to be able to watch them in order to really understand it. And I think that's also where like, if you get dropped into Gabon and you just start watching Gabon, not having the context of like why they went crazy with that season, because you had this crazy string of idol blindsides in season 16 and all of that, they wanted to kind of replicate that stuff. They wanted to keep the players on their toes. They wanted to be as chaotic as possible. But at the same time, if you watch Gabon 35th, you're also missing out on a lot of the context of like what makes Gabon so unique compared to other seasons. When you watch season 46 and you say that's kind of the Gabon of the new era, do you really know what that means? Because maybe you don't if you haven't watched them in order. So the ebbs and flows are really, really big, especially I think in the first 10 seasons it's important, but I think in the second 10 seasons, it's very important. I think from 11 through 20, that is like probably the most important stretch to watch in order, because you watch them come off of Palau, do Guatemala, bring two people back to try that out. Then you watch them do four tribes of four divided by age and gender. And they're trying to implement Exile Island. Then they try to expand to 20 people. Does that really work? Let's try it again for Fiji. Not really working. Let's go to 16 for China. Let's keep it a little bit simpler, but idols are becoming more impactful. See how idols develop from the first one used by Gary Hogaboom to the completely, completely overpowered ones that we get from Terry and for Yule. and then see how it develops in Fiji with Yao Man and what he gets and what Alex gets. And now we have two idols on both tribes and they're looking different and all of this. And how are we going to use kidnapping to our advantage in China? And then you get fans versus favorites, which is his own twist. Gabon is all over the place purposefully. Token Chains is a callback to normal purposefully. And then Samoa, Russell really does reinvent the game. And I think watching those in order and then seeing Russell reinvent Survivor is so important to do before you start watching into the 20s and the 30s and the new era. And if you've already watched some of the new era, I just think it's so important to watch that stretch in order whenever you do get to it, because you truly don't understand how much game development happened in that era. Everything was taking place. It doesn't mean that there's not better seasons outside of that stretch, but that stretch has so much impactful stuff happening and you need to know all of it because it really does. That's when Survivor said, "Ooh, we want to be more like this."
Two things that popped in my head. One of these is a kind of finishing a point I said like 20 minutes ago. It's important for you to do this because then you have all the nuance. You have all the layers where you have the abilities to understand all the nuance because you guys did all this of like, what's a Palm Pilot? When Shane's making a Palm Pilot, do you know what a Palm Pilot is? And it's like the first four seasons, nobody's like going through cell phone withdrawals. I think probably every single time for the rest of our lives, what's the hardest thing about Survivor? I'm addicted to my cell phone. I didn't have my cell phone for the first time. And like, that's going to be popping in your head. What's social media? It's like that. We can't divorce that from our thought process now of like, how would it be to go on the show? Yes, I'd be hungry, but I also wouldn't have my phone. And it's crazy that there's that layers for us. Also, I think chronologically, Survivor builds, and there's a peak. There's a peak season that I think I would guess everyone in the entire fandom would say what the peak season of Survivor is, and it's not close.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's ever been back to that peak season. And it's kind of a thing where there's some other stuff like that. Dexter had a peak season, and then it kept going on forever. And it's like, whenever you're recommending Dexter to your friends, do you say, you could stop after season four and not really lose anything? But I don't know if who would say, oh, for Survivor, stop after what's the peak season?
Heroes Villains.
Heroes versus Villains is the peak season. So when we're building up to that and we're building up to that, I do think if you're chronologically doing this and you're loving it, keep going. But if you're chronologically doing this because you want to make out your Survivor season, stop at 20.
Yeah.
Because I almost... like that 21, 22, 23, 24, 25 is brutal.
25 is not brutal.
And 25 gets you back.
Yeah.
But it's you're so far close to the edge. You're like, I don't know if I want to come back. Is Survivor really that good? And so I think that's something where that climb of to the Survivor peak, and when you go, Heroes versus Villains is the greatest season of all time. I don't have it number one in my ranking.
I don't either.
It's the peak of Survivor and everything Survivor has to offer. And if all the people that worked on Survivor got snapped in a Thanos thing or the leftovers, it'd be like, that sucks, but at least we got Heroes versus Villains first.
Well, and I think, again, like this is the importance, like when you watch and you see that Todd wins the winner bracket, people now will be like, why Todd? How could he beat all these? Well, because Todd only played once, but Todd was so popular when he won that first season. He was the first super fan to win the game, right? And you get to Heroes versus Villains, and we see this. And when people talk about how much they hate 21, 22, 23, 24, it's also because the show was just at its peak. And it was like, okay, like they figured it out. And I understand Nicaragua, again, a little bit of a hangover, maybe like Vanuatu, although Vanuatu is like a top 10 season for me. And Nicaragua's bottom five. You know, you still get a hangover and that makes sense. That's going to happen. But then it was like everything was just selling out, selling out, selling out. Why are we watching Rob versus Russell? Why are we watching Coach versus Ozzy? Why are we watching... nobody who knew that Survivor was a thing with the exception of Troy Zan for One World. Like Troy, that like, and those are the other things. Who were fans? Who weren't? Like Troy Zan's a monster fan of Survivor. Pretty much nobody else on that season cared. Colton cared. That's not a good thing. So you know, you watch 21 through 24 and people will be like, why do you hate One World so much? Because One World was at the end of the worst stretch of Survivor ever. And I was hoping with this cool idea that something interesting would happen, and it never did. What about Redemption Island? Redemption Island never should have existed. It's so unbelievably boring because they built it all around Rob versus Russell. And that's over by what, episode 3? So now what is the rest of your season? Oh, we don't really know. And so, you know, to also understand why was Philippines so unbelievably well received. Philippines is still a great season, but Philippines is an even better season because Philippines came out after this really, really dark period and let you know Survivor's not done just yet. Like, there is still hope for Survivor. We still have a shot. We can do three tribes. We can make some different things happen. Three tribes was really cool, really, really exciting. And so, like, you have these different things that the show can put in and these different tweaks, and it can work. And a captain season could work. Penner scooping and Russell Swan being there could work. And it made sense why all three of those guys were there. And I know, again, you can look at scooping now and be like, I want nothing to do with him. The guy who fell in the fire coming back for another season of Survivor was massive. Absolutely massive that ever happened. So I just, like, you watch it like that. And then you watch Fans vs. Favorites too. Wasn't popular when it first aired. Really wasn't. Like, people did not like it. I think more people are, like, more receptive to it. People didn't like it. So you were talking a five of the six seasons in that stretch, most people actively disliked. And then Blood versus Water put a different spin on the show that launched it, I think, into, like, this next phase of Survivor. And you had Blood versus Water and you had Kagi on. And Sam Wandelser, they tried to do Blood versus Water again because they wanted to rush into it so bad and they wanted to keep three tribes. So then they go to Worlds Apart. And the show kind of went in this different direction than maybe you would have thought it was going to go, because what it was doing directly after 20 didn't work. And I think it's interesting that the show is willing to try these new things, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, after it didn't work in the first four seasons. But when it didn't work in the first four seasons of the new era, which they essentially admitted by only putting one person from those four seasons on 50, rather than changing it up, they just kept doing the same shit over and over again.
Yeah. And I think, okay, Kagiyan, does it become such a blinding light of, we're back, if you don't watch those really crappy seasons first?
Yeah.
And, like, I think whenever we do the opposite of this and it's like, how to watch this dynamically, that may be the more popular answer and the more whatever. But when we go do Kagiyan as your second season ever, you may be chasing that high for 38 more times and go, what the heck? Yeah. And I think one thing chronologically that we haven't mentioned yet, which I'm actually pretty surprised, whenever you jumped on the Survivor train, we've said this in other podcasts before, but maybe there have been none behind closed doors. Usually your first season of Survivor is always kind of like, oh, I'm seeing all this for the first time and I'm enamored no matter what. Like, legitimately, if you watched season 48 as your first one ever, you're probably like, oh, cool. There's puzzle lock elements. There's people trying to play an honor game. I wonder what that's about. And these people don't normally win. And this guy stood up. That was so cool. And then you watch some 15 other seasons that are better, and you're probably like, well, that's not my favorite thing anymore. But, like, my first season ever was like a little bit of my Marquesas. But my actual first season ever was like, I'm watching every single episode of Guatemala in Exile Island. That's my first year of hardcore watching every single thing. And it's like, Exile Island is still one of my top three faves. And you're like, chronologically, you're not going to understand that. And guess what? I just said the phenomenon. What was your first one ever? Well, for 50 million people, it was Borneo.
Yeah.
So that's why whenever it is time to talk about shit, there's 50 million people whose first season of Survivor that they wax and wane about, of that was so cool, is Borneo. And that's why it's still popular. And, like, if they brought back, like, just like they did, here's the cast of Friends to talk about Friends 20 years later. And 7 million people probably watched that reunion, probably more. And it's like, if we brought back 10 people from Survivor Borneo to talk about the phenomenon and how their lives have been for 27 years, why didn't they do that? Like, I'm sure there would be not 50 million people, but...
there's a reason why Rudy is at the Karamoan finale.
Right.
Like, that's how, I mean, that was so much later, and he's at the Karamoan finale.
Because he's a celebrity in this thought process.
Yeah.
And, like, I do think that's why Jenna is on 50, but it's also, like, I would have loved Dr. Sean comes in and has an alphabet challenge or some bullshit. Like, I know that's Ghost Island in a better version of, like, Ghost Island and everyone comes back and explains their stuff. Or Island of the Idols is not just two people. It's 10 people. The Mount Rushmore season where they come and coach. Like, I think that could be coming down the pipeline. But it is something where instead of the Billie Eilish, instead of... what's the guy's name?
Jimmy Fallon.
Country music.
Oh, Zach Brown.
Zach Brown's band is going to be replaced by what? And I think that's something where when you know all this stuff and they're like, here's Greg from season one of Borneo, you're not going to go, who?
Yeah. Well, like, and
it's 50 seasons is a lot to catch up on.
I talked about this on my podcast. I did a podcast with Drew Denson, who watches 50 seasons in 50 days. He's been doing it for years, and he says this is his last time, where he'd watch all the seasons in however many days, and he'd do a podcast about each, and it was really, really fun. And I was talking to him about Second Chance, and you know, we get to Worlds Apart, and the one thing I've been talking about a lot on the Patreon is how social media really changed the way Survivor was doing things. They cast Survivor Worlds Apart, and they thought that they had a great cast. They thought they had everything assembled. Well, social media started to become much bigger during Kageyan. And so the negativity, there was always people who didn't like the direction that Survivor was going on certain things, but they didn't have a place to voice those complaints. Now they had a place to voice those complaints. And during Worlds Apart, that's why Dan Foley gets absolutely roasted at the finale, which I still think was super unfair of Jeff to do that. I think that that was a bullying moment by a major corporation on one human being. But people were able to talk about, I don't like this person. I don't like the way they talk to people. And it started to change the way that they cast the show. But what was nice is right when that happened, and I think this is the thing that people kind of miss about why Second Chance happened when it happened. It happened when it happened because social media was becoming a thing. Because social media was becoming the thing. It wasn't just Facebook. Because what a lot of people who have Facebook nowadays, and I don't know how many people have Facebook, I think it's still one of the most popular ones, if not the most popular form of social media, mainly just because so many people have it. It's kind of like Netflix. It was the first, so everybody's there. You don't remember, Facebook used to be the wall. You would log into Facebook and it would give you a chronological order of updates that people did. They would update their emotion. They would update their status. They would post a picture and you could scroll down in like 5 minutes and you would have seen everything you needed to see. You'd be all caught up. Everybody who posted anything, and they could message you. That was it. But even at the beginning, you really couldn't message on Facebook. You were using AOL still. And then Facebook brought that in. Now, all of a sudden, social media is a way, 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 way bigger deal, right? And so Second Chance comes along because they can start to get the conversation going. And this was an example of Survivor using the technology and the culture around them to try to do a positive for the show. And I think that that gets lost on people. They wanted to create this because the conversation was now happening on Twitter, a place where Jeff could say, hey, go hashtag this, follow this person, do this, do that. Now we're going to have a fan vote. And we can have a fan vote because we have a space for people to vote. It's not just go visit the website. It's, hey, you can make these videos. Here's who you can share your favorites. You can get a whole conversation going about it. And it's not just a conversation that's happening at the water cooler. It's a conversation that's happening in a public forum where then people want to be a part of the conversation. So they want to go join. And that's where Second Chance was great. Because through 30 seasons, you could keep track of every player and you could see who you liked and who you didn't like and what you wanted to accomplish with, you know, getting them on the show. They put together a great grouping. And Second Chance was their first real jump into, social media. Korong was the last season to have a cast that they were willing to be a little bit more negative. But because Second Chance had social media attached to it and had the hype, they put that one out before Korong. But if you actually watch Korong before Second Chance, you will see the cast is almost exactly like Worlds Apart. The season is way more physical than Second Chance. It's way more demanding. But because it was so down on everybody, they changed the way that they put Second Chance together. And then after Korong and Second Chance, the whole show changes. because now it's all about social media. It's all about gaining traction there. That's how you're going to keep your show alive. It's not enough to just have people sit down and watch TV. You need to have the conversation going on around, because streaming is starting to take over. This is around when Netflix started to take over and everybody else wanted to jump in. And that's something that's really important to note, because you'll notice the cast completely changed in the 30s, and what is happening on the show completely changes in the 30s. The amount of twists, the amount of advantages, the randomness. We want Adam Klein to steal a reward in Millennials vs. Gen X just so we can have the social media moment about it. And like, if you don't have that context, it doesn't all add up. But with that context, as stupid as some of the decisions they made in the 30s were, it made sense why they were making those decisions. And it was because the social media world had taken over. That's why they wanted to do something like Ghost Island. Even though Ghost Island sucks, they wanted to get the conversation going on social media about, hey, remember this, remember that. By the way, we have a stream. We have a way that you can stream all these episodes soon. Like, that's it. Go buy the DVDs. So, yeah, it's crazy the shift that happened after the second chance vote when Survivor started to become more about social media.
And DVDs. Binging. Like, there wasn't really a way to do this. The Outdoor Network or Outdoor, what was the W part of Outdoor? Something OWN, I think, was the actual name. And it was like the Outdoor Network.
Wasn't that Oprah Winfrey's?
Oh, yeah. I'm getting them confused.
That's the Oprah Winfrey.
The Outdoor Network had Survivor episodes. And
Outdoor Channel. That's what it is.
Outdoor Channel. Thank you. Yeah. Outdoor Channel had Survivor episodes. And this was deep into your cable package. So it was a Dish Network thing, or it was whatchamacallit. And I don't know who, if you didn't watch Survivor the first time it came around, some of the times you're seeing the first time of these episodes with no context because you're at somebody's house on a Saturday night and they're doing the Outdoor Network Survivor. And you're like, oh, cool. I haven't seen this one. Randomly dropped up in one episode of one through, I think it was like seasons 1 through 10. That's what they had the rights for. And they would do like, these three episodes have the three best blind sides. It would have like countdowns. And I know that some people are probably repressing that memory of like, what channel was that on? Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I kind of remember that. It's not the most important thing. It's like maybe 60 to 600,000 people watch Survivor that way, but it's not the premier way to do it. But it's like, I don't know. I don't even know the Outdoor Channel's second part of its name, but I'm aware of Outdoor Channel because of Survivor, not because they go, that's the channel where they shoot ducks and turkeys on, but that's the commercials, and there'd be commercials for big trucks and stuff. But it's like, we think Survivor would help get our more views on there, and that's how I pay attention to that stuff.
Yeah.
So that's another thing where it's like that part of our society. I we're watching chronologically now, and I don't know if this is off the rails because we've been pretty good, but it's like, I think that's something too, that how do you watch Survivor? The DVDs. That's where I was going. So the DVDs, if you haven't seen these seasons, oh, I'm going to buy the DVDs and I'm going to watch them at home. And now I have access. And there used to be some behind the scenes stuff, maybe on the first couple seasons, but not on seasons 22, 23, 24, when those came on. And then the DVDs would always spoil the freaking season of they have the winner in the direct mm-hmm. middle. And it's like, should I even tell you that? But you're going to find out pretty easily. And like, then that became like a, just like we do, who would be in your All-Star season? It was like, before the DVD cover come out, people would be like, here's who I think is going to be on the DVD. And you're like, how sad and pathetic. Oh, well, that's fandom for you. Like, yeah. That's just something to complain about or argue about or be like, why is Francesca on the front cover of Redemption Island? She's the first boot. Mm-hmm. What the hell? And it's like, well, is that the most important thing? Older DVDs had cast commentaries. I definitely remember that for All Stars of like, they're talking about all this kind of stuff. That is literally Randy from.
That is 100% Randy.
Thank you, Randy. And it's like, you would want that for your most amazing seasons of like China and Gabon. You're like, give me everything you can from that season. And DVDs were something this is going to sound a little weird, but like when my first year of living in LA, I was like, hey, I want to meet up with anybody that does reality TV. And there was somebody from Mark Burnett's company. And I was like, hey guys, people want to binge watch Survivor. Mm-hmm. I promise you. I'm not saying I'm the reason why streaming exists for CBS, because I certainly didn't think of it like this, but I had a conversation with somebody 30 years older than me with a bunch of entertainment experience who was Akasek. I don't even remember his name. I don't know how I could find the email. But I was like, I promise you people want to binge watch old seasons. And they were like, I don't think it makes financial sense for us to put them anywhere. Because back in the day when DVDs were a thing, you're spending $40 to $80 for box DVD sets of TV seasons. Mm-hmm. And it was like, nobody's going to do that. But it was like, oh, I'll pay $10 for a subscription and watch 50 seasons. Like, this is another thing. The barrier of entry to watch Survivor chronologically
was so hard back in the day.
So prohibitively expensive that, oh, you guys didn't do this when you were younger. Like, why would we do this now? It's so easy. If you don't have a great job, $10 a month, $15, oh, it keeps going up. Maybe even $20 a month for Paramount Plus is insane. But if you're killing a season of Survivor four episodes a day, it's like, that's kind of worth it. Like, you're not, I don't know.
You're getting hours
of entertainment. But
I get what you're saying. And I think that there was this misconception that people wouldn't rewatch it and stuff like that. I remember when I was watching the seasons,
I'm adding to you and hopefully not getting you off your thing. Cause people were like, well, if you knew who the winner was, why would you watch it again?
That's literally like, where I was going.
If you know, who kills Michael Corleone's brother, why would you watch
that? Okay. You literally took the words out of my mouth, except mine was an anecdote about my actual family. Cool. I'll never forget my dad saying to me, why do you want to rewatch? You already know what happens. And I said, you rewatch The Godfather every year. Like, he literally watches it every year. I know I don't look Italian. My dad's Italian. He watches The Godfather every year because it reminds him of his family and stuff. Like the big Italian family. I don't know about mom.
His family blows up cars with people.
Yeah, they hate everybody. Don't mess with us. But the whole thing is, it's like there's this feeling of, well, I'll keep rewatching. You mentioned Jaws earlier. I'll watch Jaws every 4th of July or around 4th of July because it's summer and that's what we do. But you can't go rewatch a Survivor season? Why not? Like, what makes it weird to want to rewatch the storylines and see how it happens? Like, watching that, there's just as much excitement and there's just as much to discover, because even though it's something that's not scripted, it's still being put together in a way. Watch the way they set up the win in Vanuatu. Once you know the win in Vanuatu, it's incredible. And so there's a difference to that. And you know, I know we've gotten a little off here and I don't want to go too much longer, but like, as you get into the mid to late 30s, you see that the show totally changed and totally wanted to be something else. We lose Lynn Spillman after season 38. Casting takes a shift. People don't want to acknowledge this, but the first season ever cast, not by Jesse, right? It was by Jeff? Island of the Idols?
No comment. I have no idea.
Okay. But it was the first season post-Lynn was Island of the Idols. Well, that didn't go so well now, did it? Although I actually think Island of the Idols has a great cast aside from the whole Dan situation. But the way the Dan situation was handled, people already didn't want to watch Island of the Idols. And we were already looking forward to what Winners at War was going to be, because Winners at War obviously had leaked. I think this is really where like the chronological aspect of this needs to end, because everybody knows with the new era, what you have to do with the new era. But I do think that a lot of people started watching because of COVID, or right after COVID, or during COVID, or whatever was going on. They discovered Survivor. They have nothing to do but watch the things. And so this is what happens. And so you watch the seasons and you don't really understand. People loved Dave versus Goliath. But other than that, 34, 35, 36, 38, and 39 were so unpopular when they were airing. Nobody liked them. Everybody was bored. Everybody was out on it. Nobody wanted the Edge of Extinction type twist. Island of the Idols was unpopular even before it aired because of the whole Rob and Sandra thing. And then to have the insane controversy surrounding it as well, everybody was just moving forward to Winners at War. And Winners at War, there was so much hype and people were so excited about the show. And then COVID hit. And it totally changed the way I think the direction of the show was going to go. The trajectory of the show shifted. They wanted to be something else than what they were. They lost all their momentum from Winners at War. And I think that's why 41, 42 are just like so different of a show than what Survivor was before that. So that's kind of my take on the chronological aspect of all of this, is just, you know, during Kageyan, social media started to become relevant. Second Chance was their best use of social media. Korong ending, Millennials vs. Gen X was their response to social media. the late 30s were because of social media, and then everything in the 40s was because of what happened during COVID. And I think the whole survivor building off of things and taking chances and maybe having a failed season here or there and then having to make tweaks and all that, they stopped. And that's hopefully what the open era is going to change, is that the open era is actually going to do different things and make things exciting. And we won't just get the same season over and over again.
And I think what's crazy about the new era is, if you are watching chronologically, we already said there's a peak of Survivor. Mm-hmm. And it was season 20. And then is there a second peak? Or is it more of a point of no return, or not cut your losses because we're not that negative? But I think there's a second, like, pretty obvious stopping point. And that would be Tony wins a second time. It's a good ending for a franchise. And then it kind of had to be an ending for a year because of COVID-19. And I think it is something where, is 41, oh, we're back, or is 41 so different? And I think it's something where whenever you're in this nuance and you know stuff, if you're a 41 fan and you watch, I think it would be interesting. I started watching 41 because I needed something to do during pandemic. And if you're one of the people, I watched 41 through 50, and then this summer, I wanted to see where all those people came from. And then I started with one and went through 40. If you went 41 through 50 and then one through 40, how many of one through 40 surpass your favorite seasons of 41 through 50? Uh-huh. That's not a number that you can say whatever, but it is kind of like a, then this is a different season. This is a different show. This is not as good as my old stuff. And I do think there's something where we changed the point of Survivor. We changed the flow of Survivor. We changed the whatever of Survivor. And that could be like not adding the 3-point line. That's different. It's like,
yeah,
it's almost like taking the 3-point line away, or like there's a difference between college baseball and professional baseball. And then there's the minor league baseball. And it's like, imagine you live in St. Louis, where you watch the Cardinals for 10 years and they're so good with Albert Pujols, and then you move outside the city and the only thing they have is a AAA baseball team. But you're like, I still love baseball. I love going to hot dogs and getting beers, and I don't have access to the Cardinals anymore in person. So I'm going to go to this AAA game. And it's like, they play 26 days of baseball at the AAA. Yeah. They care about kid interaction more in AAA baseball. But it's not the pros.
Yeah.
And maybe that's something where you're like, God, I wish I still lived in St. Louis.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And the other thing is, obviously, people were never happy about it just going to Fiji and locking in at Fiji. But it makes sense. I mean, we just did our rewatch of Ko-Rong and Second Chance. It makes sense why that was the breaking point for them, to get them to go to Fiji over and over. But that was another negative thing that people had when we were watching 34, 35, 36. We were like, God, this is just so old. We're watching the same thing. We don't want this. And then 37 hit and people really did like it a lot. And 38 and 39 didn't work. And so it was like, what is this show? And yeah, I mean, I think that if you watch Survivor in order, the storyline of the there is a storyline to this show. This isn't simply like movies started being made, then they had sound, then they had color, then different things happen and whatever. Like you are watching a society evolve over 26 years. And I think that's also why I enjoy watching them in order, because I get to see our society shift from 2000 to 2026. I don't go back and forth between 2019, 2013, 2004, 2024. Like, I think that you can do that. You can watch it however you want. But I do think that there's something cool about watching it chronologically like that. So we are going to be doing that dynamic version next time. I think sometime next week, that'll probably be the move, because then we're going to get into our winner rankings, the last Tuesday of June. So that'll be on June 30th. So thank you all for listening to this. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Like this video and subscribe to the channel. If you want to hear us get into these seasons even more, patreon.com/thespecialist. Starting Thursday, we got Millennials versus Gen X coming out. John and McKenna are doing Bitter or Better jurors, the first juror, and how they impact the winner of their season and their season in general. So make sure you check that series out. That airs on Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern. Once Upon an Island and I, we are doing Winning Survivor. We've done the first two episodes of that. If you haven't checked it out, make sure you do. That is seasons 1 through 10. We're going to be doing 11 through 15 this Thursday, and we talk about all the winners, and we're going to be doing that 7 more weeks after this. So thank you all so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed this episode, and we will see y'all next time.
See ya.